The committee will come to order. We have a quorum present. Could I get someone to approve the minutes? March 10th, 2011.
I can move the minutes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Ernie Lager, approve the minutes. Minutes are approved. All those in favor of the approval of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Any discussions? Minutes are approved. Before us, we're going to hear House File 645. Representative Mulry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move House File 645 and it'd be laid over for inclusion in the possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
All right.
And should I go?
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Members, the depression or recession, whatever you want to call it, has hurt a lot of people, but it's been especially difficult on the communities of color. And this bill would make an attempt to reduce the high unemployment rate. In some parts of my district, there's over 30% unemployment, for instance, and that's true in other areas where there's large communities of color. And this bill was worked up by three of the four agencies for the communities of color that are actual state agencies: the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans, the Council on Chicano Latino People, and the Council of Black Minnesotans, and they're each represented here. And I'll let Hector do the initial explanation of the bill, and he has also a letter from Department of Transportation that the person is out of town today, and then there's a few other witnesses. There's another witness for the department in the affirmative action department, and the two other councils of color. Thank you, Mr.
Well, welcome to the committee, sir. Could I have you state your name for the record, please?
Thank you. I'm Hector Garcia. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Chicano Latino Affairs Council. I appreciate the opportunity to speak. Members of the committee, Mr. Chair, we've submitted this bill recommendation to Representative Mulry because of the high level of unemployment in our communities. In the case of the Latino community, we have a 15.5% rate of unemployment, which is more than double that of the state. And we have, in contrast, the highest participation rate in employment of 83.3%, which speaks to our interest in being employed. So one of the things where we need assistance is in training. A lot of our community members are not appropriately trained, and there's a great opportunity at MnDOT in particular. Emma Corey is here to testify as well, and Lynn Geschwind sent in a letter saying that there will be approximately 200 jobs available at MnDOT, which could conceivably be directed to the minority communities because they're making an effort to work with our communities. So would you like to add something to that?
Could you say your name for the record, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Eileen Herr, and I am the executive director for the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans. The issue of training and workforce development has been a very important issue for the Asian Pacific community for the past many years, primarily because our challenges is in working with a community that is new to America. 50% of the Asian Pacific community in the state of Minnesota are refugee-based and a refugee experience. That means coming to this country from war-torn areas of the world that unfortunately are underdeveloped countries, so where English is not taught and where there are limited job skills. And then particularly for the newest of Minnesotans from Burma, from Tibet, these are refugees and communities that have been in refugee camps for the last 10 to 15 years. And at refugee camps, it is exactly what you see on TV, tents, food that's provided by the United Nations, little opportunity for job skills, job development, little opportunity for education, and littler opportunity for English language skill development. So when that community comes to Minnesota, the challenges of employing them are very, very high. And there are not enough opportunities. So there are great programs that are happening, but there are not enough programs to help. And what we're finding out in that Southeast Asian, particular refugee experience communities like Hmong, Vietnamese, Cambodian, their unemployment rate is twice that of whites. So for example, the white unemployment rate nationally is at 2.3, but for the Hmong is 6.5. And so that means twice as many Hmong are unemployed as white, their white counterpart. And that provides a challenge for us in terms of so many other socioeconomic issues. And so an idea that we've had with the community and good ideas and best practices actually is that when we can focus on specific training programs that target a specific community that has a specific experience, refugee-based experience, and we target resources and target money to them, their chances of being employed and staying in their job significantly increases. And so we have been working for the past many years with DEED and also with the workforce centers where a large percentage of our community resides. But even with that, those opportunities and those programs are limited, and we would like to see it increased.
Emma Corey from DOT.
State your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Emma Corey, and I am the Workforce and Business Development Project Manager at MnDOT. I am speaking on behalf of both as an HR manager at MnDOT, also speaking on behalf of internal MnDOT positions, but also on jobs with our contractors. As you know, MnDOT contracts several construction projects, also professional technical contracts. So we're talking about workforce internally at MnDOT as well as on our contracts and our construction projects. A couple things that I would like to say. MnDOT has been very focused about our recruitment efforts, both internally and externally, that our focus is on increasing the participation of minorities, so the four ethnic communities, people with disabilities, women in non-traditional jobs, and veterans. That has been our focus for all of our recruitment efforts. And the reason why I say that is because the jobs that we do, again, are an opportunity. 50%, not quite 50%, but a little less than half of all our jobs are technician positions that do not require a degree. But most of them do require a commercial driver's license. And so is there an opportunity for us to connect? Again, my friend Lester Collins is not at the table. He probably should be. But Council of Black Minnesotans, again, friend and colleague Eileen and Hector Garcia with the Chicano Latino Affairs Council, also Anna Marie Hill with the Indian Affairs Council. All four are active participants and members on our advisory committee to our recruitment efforts, both on the internal as well as on the workforce and DB collaborative on the external side. The reason why I say that there is an opportunity here is because our positions require a communication with our communities. You know, we're talking about a CDL license. Right now, MnDOT is partnering with community organizations. We can't do all the training and development in-house. We need to partner with credible organizations that have deep roots in the community, that can help bring the right candidates to us. But the role that we play is to give them a good, realistic, practical understanding of what these jobs require. As you know, as I know, not everybody's cut out to do construction. Not everybody's cut out to snowplow. And so what we want to do, very often the communities will say, you know, I could be out there holding a sign with a stop sign. I can do that job. I hear it pays $17, $20 an hour. What they don't know is that same guy who holds the stop sign also directs traffic and plows snow in the winter and does a lot of other things as a technician at MnDOT. So our intent is to partner with credible organizations that have deep roots so that we have an avenue to give candidates in our communities a very realistic understanding of these jobs. What does it require? What does it take? You know, if you're working for a MnDOT contractor, you might do a job in Minneapolis 1 week, and you might be up in Duluth or in Farmington or somewhere else, wherever the work goes, the workers go with them. So the reality of these jobs to our candidates, so that then they can self-select in, self-select out. We might have fewer takers, but we will have candidates that will build careers. And that's the reason why we're now partnering also with the unions, trying to get a Minneapolis Urban League and the Laborers Union, a summit, and the 49ers together, so that they can partner up, bring the reality of the job to those candidates, and then we're looking at candidates that will come in and be focused from day one. Their first summer, they are focused on coming back each summer, because that's what the construction industry needs. They don't want someone who will come in and for 50 cents more at Cub, they will leave the job and go and work in retail. We want people who just love to do this work, who love to plow snow, who love to fill potholes, and we're willing to share what it takes to be successful in our industry. And then we want to see people that look like myself and people around the table here. And, you know, I see Representative Clark, a fixture in our communities. Thank you for all your work. But again, we want those communities to begin to see themselves in those jobs for the long haul as career partners. Because the big primes are just telling us right now that, you know, we had a steady stream of farm kids that were coming into work for us. That's drying up. We need more new entrants in our field. MnDOT's not going away. The construction needs are not going away. You hear about our pavements. You know, the need is there. And we've got a ripe, young community. There was Asian Pacific Day at the Capitol yesterday. I was just so thrilled to see that young energy in that room. So those are the kids that we want to inform them about what these careers are, but take the best and the brightest and to come in and do what they love to do, because that's where they can serve us best as a state.
Thank you. Representative McFarland, you have a question?
Maybe we should.
Go ahead, sir. If you could state your name for the committee, please.
Lester Collins, Director of the State Council on Black Minnesotans. And I think most of what I would say has already essentially been said. I certainly applaud the courage of Representative Mallory in terms of presenting the bill. And again, in terms of professional development, particularly licensing and those kinds of things, we have many organizations, community organizations, I think, that are struggling to essentially provide the services. They have the expertise. They need the assistance themselves in terms of assisting others who need these jobs. So, again, I urge your support in this effort as we move forward in these challenging times. But I think we are talking about jobs that are going to be lasting and that continue and that will aid our community in many respects. So that's it.
Thank you, sir. Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just not sure if Deed would be able to respond to this. Has Deed administered a competitive grant program like this in this context?
No, it hasn't been done.
Okay.
No, this is our recommendation. I've been discussing with Deed the possibility of their doing it, but it has not been specifically assigned.
Okay, and to that, Mr. Chair, what would Deed's roles be in administering this then, and what would the council's role be in how they would determine who would get these grants?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I the way we've envisioned it is that the funding might be available at Deed. There's $15 million that we understand they're close to receiving. We're talking with them about the possibility of some of that money going towards this purpose. If it does, then those training centers that are recommended by MnDOT and Met Council would receive the funding in order to train the people that we would bring to the table.
Okay, and a follow-up to that.
Yes.
Do you feel that the councils have the capacity to do these kinds of grants, staffing and expertise?
The councils would not be doing that. We would be a catalyst more than anything in bringing the appropriate organizations together that would do it. We're simply submitting the recommendation for the bill and trying to bring everybody to the table, but we directly would not be doing that work.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Leidiger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mulry, we have MnDOT here. Connect the dots. I don't see this in the bill. Why? How does that work? What's your intention here,
Mr. Chair and Representative Leidiger? The reason MnDOT is here is as an example that that these wouldn't necessarily go to MnDOT, but there are going to be openings. For instance, we have a huge problem that I've actually. Amazingly to some, when I first started working on the fact that the state employment of minorities is way below what we require of everybody that contracts with the state, the person who first helped me when he was chair of a committee here was Representative at that time Phil Krenke. And he saw the problem that we had with a lack of affirmative action here at state. And so while this training would be people that could go into any jobs, the reason that MnDOT is here is an example of the fact that there will be openings, and MnDOT and some of the other agencies are under considerable, might not use the word pressure, but something on that order to start hiring minorities. And there would be a lot of openings here for people that could be trained by that. The one letter said probably 200 in actual MnDOT employees because of an early retirement program, partly. And then also, as Ms. Corey indicated, she has a program that's much better than anything else at the state as far as involving minority contractors, and there would be a lot of jobs either for other contractors, for minority workers, or these people could sometimes go into by themselves being a single contractor on certain types of jobs and would fulfill the minority contracting requirement. MnDOT has both federal and state kinds of projects, so they're a little different from, for instance, Admin, which is a different agency, just has the state ones.
Can I follow up along that line? Go ahead. Yeah,
I could certainly follow up a little bit, also, Representative Chair, members of the committee. What I would say also is that MnDOT recently—it's almost about 2 years now—that has put together what we refer to as the DBE and Workforce Collaborative. It is basically 8 different stakeholder groups that have been meeting on a monthly basis to brainstorm ideas to increase diverse workforce as well as DBE, so subcontractor participation on MnDOT contracts. And this group, and I'll get a copy to you, Chair, but this group just recently submitted its recommendations and the work of its last year in this report to the legislature that was provided to Senator Gimsey and Senator Dibble at a recent meeting in the beginning of February. So again, right now, MnDOT is poised to, in fact, to give you an example, we have picked a real project, I-694 US 10 Snelling Interchange project that will be let in May of this year, construction starting in August. We're calling it a pilot project because we are doing some things that we have never done before to increase workforce and DBE participation on this project. The intent is for our primes as well as our subcontractors to hear the message that we are looking to support them with avenues for workforce, but also supporting DBE development. We've got our DBE supervisor in the room, and we have been supporting several programs to build that pool of qualified DBEs. So we're not just going out there and telling the primes you need to have higher participation. We are balancing that by actually supporting training programs as well as DBE coaching, mentor protege, working capital, loan fund, things like that that will support the supply along with the demand for increased accountability and participation on our projects. Thank you.
Representative Leitiger?
Well, are you under... now, you have federal requirements, hiring requirements, I think. You have some state requirements, of which I don't know what those are, mm-hmm. but are there quotas for minorities?
Those would be referred to as aspirational goals.
Okay.
They are aspirational goals, yes.
And, Mr. Chairman, my concern would be that, you know, we're going to set up this pipeline,
yep.
a hard, fast pipeline, by instituting these grants, that's all we're doing is looking at one group of people to fill MnDOT ranks. But I think you also did address the idea of filling the ranks of the contractors,
Absolutely.
Which, of course, is the private
Absolutely.
Sector. And that's really what I'm leading towards, Representative Mulry. What other things are we doing to look at the private sector, you know, a direct link into the private sector with these grants so that we can, get greater minority hiring throughout and not just the government programs?
Representative Mulry?
Mr. Chair and Representative Leitiger, as maybe a member of the building trades knows, they're trying to work on this also.
Mm-hmm.
They're pushing these programs with apprentices to try and get them into the trades. And Representative Leitiger, this isn't just for construction, this work.
Yep.
We're trying to get them into private employment, such as manufacturing, different things like that. I've been working on this about 10 years, and like I say, it first started in sitting in Representative Krenke's committee, and we found out how behind the state is, even on what we require of other people. And so that just branched out into how do we get people into all types of jobs that aren't a PhD in philosophy or something, into what would be called tech and vocational jobs. And those are so important to especially a lot of the minority communities where they don't have families that can finance 4 or more years of college. And so it's not the easiest thing in the world because there is, within each industry, there's a tradition of, like in the trades, it used to be, I know some of the trades, you had to have your dad or grandfather had to be one of them in order to get in. And even if you were married to the daughter of the president of the union, you couldn't get in. So it's taken a while to try and open it up. I think that I work a lot with the trades, and I think most of them are doing a pretty good job of trying to get more recruitment. And one of the reasons that we have involvement from the communities of color councils is because they have a lot more access than most people to the people in their communities, and they know the agencies. For instance, the Southeast Asian agencies, I have worked with them quite a bit, and so I know the way that a lot of Southeast Asians, for instance, go to their local. Like if it's a Hmong, they go to the Hmong Association. If it's Lao, they go to the Lao PTA or Lao Assistance Center, different things like that. And the councils of color have a direct contact with those types of agencies, which is the best way to recruit from these minority communities.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Representative Swidzinski is next.
Chair Lemire, Representative Mullery, we were talking about some of the numbers we're starting to throw around here at the Capitol is within the 4 years, it's estimated, I think, 65% of state employees are going to be turning 65. You know, so what, you know, looking kind of historically, what are some of those numbers when it comes to our percentages of minority participation and versus, you know, where you see that going forward, I guess?
Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Swidzinski, I would hope that we recognize our responsibility as a state to bring in these different culture and background people and get them into state government. As I said, we have a horrible record as a state because I don't think we even meet half of what we require as goals by contractors with the state. We did at one time back was around 2000 or 2001 when Representative Krinke at the time chaired state government, we got them to hire a specialist from the East Coast on how to hire minorities into state government, and they hired, I think, in the old DOER, which was Department of Employee Relations before you got here, now it's in MMB. I think they got up to about 6 staff persons to work on this, and then when there was a transformation of the executive branch, and a lot of those people got laid off to where I believe there's only a 1/3 person now that works on that. So hopefully we will go back to recruitment of that. And with, as you said, I didn't realize I haven't been on the numbers. I knew it was impending. I didn't know it was quite what you said. But it's a tremendous opportunity for the state. And we have to work through the councils that are, they are state agencies, and they have the connections into the color communities that can make the link so that we can have the job openings communicated to them, and in turn it explained to the people how they can get jobs with the state. It's not the easiest thing in the world.
Representative Swidzinski.
Thank you very much.
I could certainly add for MnDOT, I will say that with the early retirement incentive that was offered by MnDOT to our employees, we had 9% that have taken it, and that means 400 plus employees that are leaving the agency between now and January and June of this year. So a good number. Of course, the intent is to be able to save out of that incentive, and so we will not be filling, of course, each one of those positions. But as you know, we do some important work this time of year, so we will be filling part of those jobs for sure. So absolutely hear you, and we have said this, one-third of our most technical staff will be leaving, exiting MnDOT in the next, or at least will be eligible. What we're seeing is people are staying at an average of 3 years, 3 to 5 at the max beyond retirement because of the cost of health care and things like that. But they still, within the 3 to 5 year window from first becoming eligible, do end up leaving. And so that is a very, very real scenario for an HR manager at MnDOT. Yes.
Mr. Garcia.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'd just like to emphasize that state economist Stinson, demographer Gillespie, Minnesota Chamber of Commerce Vice President Bill Blazer have all been indicating that there is a huge untapped resource among immigrants in Minnesota that can help address the problems that are facing all of us. And the three councils represented here have the representation of communities that are made up to a large degree by immigrants and refugees. And the problem is that, as my colleague Eileen Herr mentioned, they don't often have the knowledge, the awareness of how to connect the dots, how to gain access to the jobs for which they're qualified but might not be licensed. They have the right age. For example, in the Latino community, the median age is 24 years old as compared to the majority community median age of 40. We will be able to address a lot of the needs that exist in the state, not only in performing jobs such as this, but also in bringing about more innovation as people evolve, and also addressing the high costs of medical care with the aging population of Minnesota if we begin to climb up the ladder of employment. And so our role as the councils is to try to bring together the right groups so that we can establish that ladder for our people to start climbing.
Thank you. Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a wonderful... This is a new program, but it sounds like it really makes a lot of sense, and I thank you for coming down to testify. The only point I would make for Representative Mullery and for the committee is that this bill is asking for an appropriation from the Workforce Development Fund, and as we are learning, the state is going to need a lot more employees in the future, but the state, as I understand it, and I could be wrong, is not a contributor to the workforce development assessment, which creates this fund. So there, this possibly should be in the general fund category simply because the state is not a contributor. This bill is asking the other private businesses to contribute to this fund, which would help the state get its employees. And I guess there's just maybe a disconnect there, and maybe that would need a little bit other legislation to try to change that. But as we've learned from our budget targets, which this committee from the general fund is scheduled to be reduced by 51.5%, I just don't know how this would fit under the Workforce Development Fund since the state is not a contributor to that because they don't pay unemployment insurance.
Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Scalzi, I don't think that has anything to do with the people that I've worked with on workforce development, and I know a good friend of mine runs one of the retraining agencies, and it doesn't matter where you get a job. It doesn't matter if you go and work at Joe's Garage or work for the state of Minnesota or whatever. It's the purpose is to get people trained and into jobs, and so I think it fits perfectly there. I'm sure that the Councils of Color don't care where the money comes from as long as the people get trained and get into jobs. And the fact that we had MnDOT here was an example that there are jobs, and it's an example of where there would be openings for them. So it's to point out that there's openings there for these types of workers if they can get the training.
Representative Scalzi?
Just as a follow-up, I don't dispute that at all, Representative Mullery. I'm just making a point that this is to prepare people for jobs in private industry as well, which in theory is why private industry is being asked to support by the specialized tax just on private employers. And I just don't know that it's appropriate that the private employers then subsidize a program that would only, in this case, affect the state. And we will need more state employees in the future. It's just a theoretical, philosophical discussion that we should have as we go through our budget.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Scalzi, there's no directing that they go to the state here. It's training them. We're pointing out that there are openings. And as I said, the agencies that are contracted with the state and the state workforce centers don't say you don't go to the state and you have to go to Joe's Garage. They just train the people and get them jobs afterwards. It's got nothing to do with trying to direct them one way or the other.
Thank you. Representative Stensrud.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And perhaps Representative Mullery. I may have missed something. I'm trying to back up and get a big picture. These are good programs directed at folks who need work, and I see some value in that. Is this different? I heard the words like a competitive grant program. I don't know if those are your words or the words in the bill or if someone else said that. Is it fundamentally different in the sense, is there a competition or different outcomes, or is there outcome-based funding? Is it different from funding another group? I mean, we've had lots of groups who want to provide employment and create jobs. So I just want to see if there's anything fundamentally different. If you could help me.
Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chair and Representative Stensrud, I guess I was trying to explain that the councils of color have a lot of ways. Almost all the agencies are members. If the agency really has contacts in the community, they generally have a membership, or not a formal membership, but they're part of the groups that the councils of color deal with. And so let's say that Ms. Herr, she's still here, I'm very involved, for instance, not only in the African American community, but in the Asian community in Hennepin County. And so when I am at one of the, let's say, the Lao assistance, or whether it be Lao, the other Lao organization, Lao PTA, whether it's at HAMA, Hmong agency, there's a couple of Hmong. The people come to these agencies. They don't go to workforce centers or anything like that. If you're a person that's, let's say, in their 40s, came over from Laos, they just don't. And they do go to their cultural center. And that then has contact with Ms. Herr's agency, the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans. So it's a great way to work through to the people of color, is through our own state agencies that have the, in other words, like Lester left from the Council of Black Minnesotans. If you're the Urban League, if you're somebody else that's an African-American agency, you have contact directly with the Council of Black Minnesotans. Or in the case, there's a lot of African immigrants, and they're even more looking at their own culture and going there first. So they have a contact through the councils of color. So what we're trying to do is get out to the actual people there much better than, there's all kinds of people claim that they're doing that, but what I've seen is that they do have that, and the people that come I just have, like I say, quite a bit. The experience that I can see a lot of is in the Southeast Asian community, where they really go to their particular agency and then learn things from them, and that agency works with the Asian Pacific Council on getting things together.
Representative Stensrud.
Thank you.
Representative Clark, and if we could be brief, members, so we got four more bills to go through.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mulder, is there an appropriation figure that you can give us for this that you have in mind?
We didn't. I think he had a rough figure.
Garcia? Mr. Chair, Representative, the figure that is totally hypothetical, but based on the 200 jobs available at MnDOT, according to the letter that we're submitting, would call for $5,000 approximately per person, which would bring it to $1 million. But, you know, that would be the high aspiration, you know, it's what we can derive from the figures that we have. Obviously, what's available doesn't necessarily have to be the same amount.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Clark.
Mr. Garcia, you mentioned something in your testimony about there. You heard there were $55 million available at
15.
What were you referring to? Would you share that with the committee?
Yes, there is some funding that's coming from the Treasury to DEED. I understand it's within a few weeks that money will be available, primarily for creation of new companies, some of them DBEs. And I don't know whether we can rely on that amount, but it's one of the funds that we're taking a look at.
Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chair and Representative Clark, I've talked to DEED about that. I don't think that's going to be very beneficial to most of this program. That would be something that could be included in this, but it's not going to meet what we're looking at mostly here.
Okay, thank you. I'm just trying to deal with the whole issue of workforce versus general fund and so on. And I strongly support what you're trying to do, no matter where the money comes from. And I think you're absolutely right. Most of the benefit goes to the private sector, people who get trained to go back into the private sector. But I did notice one, what I think is a little bit of flaw here, and I don't know if you meant to do this on purpose, but in the last subdivision, you list three councils that you're working with rather than fourth, and I'm wondering why the Indian Affairs Council is not included.
If I may, Mr. Chair and Representative, the reason why it's not included is because the Indian Affairs Council preferred not to participate in this particular bill recommendation.
Mr. Chairman, maybe I could have a conversation with the author later to find out what that's about. That would be helpful.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, as soon as I saw the bill come in that way, I told them to contact the Indian Affairs Council, and then they declined to participate, I guess.
I'll address that. Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, all the councils, we try to collaborate on as many issues as we can, and then there's some issues that impact our community more so than others and where we are in terms of readiness and preparedness. So with regards to Lester, Hector and I, workforce development and retraining has been an issue that our councils have been working on for the last couple of years. So it seems like that's a natural progression of where we would partner in terms of coming forward with a bill. So Indian Affairs Council has partnered with us on other bills, but in this bill, we thought that we would go ahead with our three councils just because we have the support, the movement, and the momentum within the community in which to accomplish this.
Thank you. All right, with that, we will lay House File 645 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you.
Representative McFarland, House File 995. Thank you. State your name for the record.
You know who she is.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 995 to be heard and laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Very good. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 995 appropriates $400,000 in the biennium to the Women's Venture, a Minnesota nonprofit organization that provides women and men with tools and support to help start and grow small businesses, find a new job, or develop a new career path. Today we have three testifiers for the bill, and I'll let them start.
State your name for the record, please.
My name is Deb Wilkins-Costello. I'm the president of Women Venture. Chair and the committee, thanks for hearing us today. And thank you, Representative McFarland, for presenting our bill. Today I have with me the Diane Patterson, who's the director of our business development program at Women Venture, and a client and business owner, Jen Swinside, who will talk with you as well. The mission at Women Venture is to help women become economically successful and prosperous. We've been around for more than three decades, and we've been providing startup monies for startup businesses or businesses that are enhanced for women. In over three decades, we've served over 97,000 community or Minnesotans. As the president of the organization, it's our focus to really create jobs and create small business. And we remain mission-focused as well as fiscally focused. In your packet, we have a folder that everybody has received. In your packet, there is a one-page fact sheet that shows our outcomes and some data that would be helpful. Women Venture gives business loans from $500 to $35,000. To Minnesota entrepreneurs. We provide support to the loan recipients through our business courses, one-on-one consulting, and mentoring. Crucial to Women Ventures business development program is the annual grant we receive from the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development. Women Venture has been a recipient of these grants for over 19 years. And this grant also enables us to gain federal matching funds. Together, these funds represent 37% of our business development program at Women Venture. So our request today in Bill HF995 is to ask you to maintain the historical giving level of $200,000 to support our business development aspect.
State your name for the record, please.
Diane Patterson. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, assisting entrepreneurs to access capital is a key program service that we've offered at Women Venture. In 2010 alone, Women Venture loaned almost $475,000 in working capital loans that created over 140 jobs and started over 55 businesses.
Never mind.
We not only start these businesses with our loan funds, but we also have a stellar proven record of sustaining these businesses through our technical assistance services, which is why our loan default rate is presently only 4%. And I would like to know how many banks can boast that. In 2009 alone, if we just segregate that year when there were record foreclosures and challenges in the lending markets, we had a 0% default rate. And the reason we have such a low default rate is we offer unlimited technical assistance or business consulting services to our loan clients for the term of their loan, which is typically 5 years. So if a loan client needs to call me every day, I'm there. I want them to have that ability to call so that we can address challenges and strategies in a proactive manner. The SBA default rate nationally is currently 12%. We develop strong partnerships with our community banks, for example, Park Midway, Bremer, and Drake, just as a sample of a few banks that we work with. This allows us to leverage our limited resources by bringing loan packages to these banks, and we carve out a very small piece so that we can maintain our loan fund capital. and help that entrepreneur access loan funds through the bank. So we also are able to leverage our deed funding with federal funding. So the 25% reduction or $50,000 reduction that is proposed is actually a loss of $67,000 to Women Venture annually because of that loss in federal funds. So the 25% reduction in our deed funding we anticipate will cause us to not start 12 to 15 businesses, which could impact 60 to 84 jobs. And with our proven track record, it'll cut down on our ability to offer that technical assistance, whether it's to grow these businesses, sustain these businesses, or turn them around. We had we were able to turn around a business that has been in St. Paul since 1905 through our technical assistance services, where they were able to not only rehire all of their staff, they have now doubled their staff in the last year and a half. We also offer classes and training so that we can have these entrepreneurs be ready for owning their small business, understanding the difference between a cash flow statement, a balance sheet, and a profit and loss. And then we have a mentorship program that's a 12-month program partnering these entrepreneurs with seasoned business owners. I have here today Jen Swenside, who is a loan client with Women Venture and has a successful growing business, and I'd like her to tell you what she has found for services at Women Venture and how that helped.
Could you state your name for the record, please?
Jen Swenside. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for hearing from me today as well. My sister and I started this business after taking our mom out shopping. She's a two-time breast cancer survivor, and trying to find her workout wear, and basically sports bra options were very limited, and we decided that we needed to come up with a new idea. So we had some idea of a little bit of a marketing plan, but basically from there, nothing else. We came to Women Venture after a friend had recommended them to us, and in about April of 2008, and basically they held our hands and walked us through writing a full business plan, including all our financials, and we were able to obtain a loan in October of 2008. We obtained a loan through Women Venture, and then they helped us get a line of credit through Drake Bank in January of 2009, which was a real low point for the economy at that time, so that was a very big deal for us. And we were able to launch in April of 2009. Since then, they've helped us. We now have a patent pending on our sports bra, and we have done medical research and are pursuing other avenues that they've helped us to explore and move forward with marketing opportunities. We have also been awarded a contract with the military for producing sports bras for them as well. Through the advice and the support, the marketing opportunities that we've been provided by Women Venture, it's been an amazing experience for us. We've had real ups and real downs, as you do in the first couple of years of business. And we wouldn't have been able to do it. We wouldn't have been able to take this idea and move forward with it without Women Venture. Their knowledge and their support is, we are forever indebted to them. So thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Mahoney.
Vichaturi. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question for the testifier, the other testifiers have spoken to the number of jobs created. How many employees do you have?
Right now it's just my sister and I, but we are actually having our sports bras made in L.A., so we have people that we contract with, so we're helping support other small businesses in a sense, because we have people that are making the bras. We also have someone else that oversees the manufacturing, both for our military sports bras as well as for our sports bras.
you know, moving forward in the next couple of years, we definitely see it changing, but we have someone that we use for accounting, another small business. So right now we more or less been working with other small businesses to help us.
Okay. Representative Murray.
Thank you. Maybe we can work on getting those sports bras made in Albert Lee or something. As my wife, as my wife's caregiver through cancer, I'd be interested in learning a little bit more. And I'm wondering if the sports bras will entice them to work out also. Just how many of these businesses are still in business 3 to 5 years later? When you look at the firms that you're working with, or the individuals that you're working with,
Ms. Patterson. With the 4% default rate, those businesses, you know, 5 years down the road are still making their loan payments and are being and are successful. We make sure that they're sustainable, or we wouldn't have that level of low default rate.
Okay. Representative Murray,
what's the average size of Mr. Chairman? What's the average size of the businesses? Then are they generally sole proprietorships, or the
most of them are, excuse me, most of them are limited liability companies that employ somewhere in the ballpark of five to seven employees within that 5 year period.
Representative Murray.
Just one quick follow up. With your expertise, and it sounds like you've done a nice job of helping women develop businesses, learn about the technology, learn about accounting, financial statements, all that type of stuff. So you have a lot of expertise. Any way that you can leverage some of that expertise going to these banks and other lending partners, so that if you have cuts here in this, you know, program, will you be able to leverage some of your skills to help your clients get more loans or favorable loans through banking channels?
Ms. Patterson.
One way we've been partnering with some of the banking institutions is teaching our classes at their locations, so that we can expand our geographic reach, so that our classes aren't just available at Women Ventures main office, but that we can take it to outlying areas for educational purposes. But what the difficulty is, and especially now since 2008, with the economic challenges, is most of our clients are unbankable. They either don't have the level of collateral that banking institutions are looking for, which is a minimum of 100%. I've seen some banks even require 150% collateral. That's a huge, huge stumbling block, very big barrier for going into business. The other issue is low credit scores. It was published in the newspaper not that long ago that 25% of our population has a credit score of 599 or below, and most banks won't say yes unless you have a 700 or above. So there's a lot of folks that are unbankable, but they have stellar, viable business models and business ideas that will bring employment to the community, but the banks aren't saying yes.
Representative Murray?
Thank you.
Representative Moline? Sorry.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I have a question that maybe Ms. Patterson could answer. You were talking a little bit about working with the local banks, and I'm not sure what you meant when you said local, but I was just looking at this sheet that you handed out of some of the people that have benefited from Women Venture. And I'm wondering, and I don't see any anything in northern Minnesota, or really in greater Minnesota. So I'm wondering if you reach out to women in rural Minnesota who are interested in starting a business, or how they can find out that they have an opportunity through you.
Ms. Patterson.
Well, in northern Minnesota, there is another Women Business Center, Northeast Entrepreneurial Fund. And so they serve the northern part of the state, and then we serve the central part of the state. But we have been expanding our geographic outreach by partnering with U.S. Bank. It has offered to let us have classes in their different locations in outside of the metro area. So that is a key focus of ours, yes.
Representative Moline.
Thank you.
Representative Swidzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kind of going along, you know, so most loans, it looks like between $535,000. Is there an interest rate that you charge on that loan?
Yes.
Okay.
if we access, it depends. We have a couple different sources of loan fund capital. If we are utilizing loan fund capital through deed in their urban initiative program, the interest rate is 7.25%. If we are lending from our SBA loan fund capital, it is typically somewhere between 8 and 9%, depending upon the level of risk for that particular loan.
Representative Swazinski.
Mr. Chair, and then just one follow-up. So on average, what would you say, you know, so say that's the cost of the loan, that's 7% or 8%. You know, you said you were able, always available to take a phone call, and that on average, what do you think if you put it in a percentage of cost to help service that loan? You know, obviously you're offering services above and beyond, you know, so that mentoring portion. What, you know, how would you quantify that? You know, and that's a tougher question. Maybe that's for something later, but that'd be, something that I'd be interesting, you know.
Well, for administrative costs, we're sitting at about 12% for the deed grant for all administrative overhead. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. We'll talk later.
Okay. Representative Clark.
So this is a related question. I think the governor's reduction is $50,000. I don't know what this committee is going to be recommending. But what it would be the impact in relationship to some of these matching funds from the federal grant?
Well, the $50,000 deduction with our federal matching funds actually then becomes $67,000 annually. So $134,000 due to the loss of the matching funds.
So I guess the percentage would be a helpful number just to have in mind then. You have it off the top of your head what the percentage is so we can figure that out when we're...
Yes, I think, Representative Clark, I want to say it's the federal matching was another, did we say 37%? 37% of our business development budget.
Thank you.
Representative
Thanks.
Clark.
Thank you.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Does the Northeast Women's Economic Development Organization get state funding?
That I don't know. I know they get federal funding.
They get federal funding. Well, if it's a match, they must get state funding somewhere. I don't know where. Also, if you get interest from your loans, and you've made loans for many years, what is the corpus of that interest that you have in a bank? And how much do you have? You know, you have to be growing and building with that money that they pay back. What do you do with that money? And how much is it?
It's a revolving loan fund, so as we collect... from our loan fund clients, their monthly payments, we're able to lend it again to other entrepreneurs.
But what is the outstanding balance? I mean, it's got to be growing every year.
Actually, it doesn't grow every year. Yeah. We do our best, and in fact, in the 2007-2008 era, there were defaults on the loan. The percentage was much higher than it is now. We've worked very hard over the last few years to tighten those criteria, and as well, we have a very astute group monitoring it, and so in the last few years, our default rate has decreased greatly. But we aren't sitting on any money, a pile of money that, we would tell you that, that we have sitting there. Our loan fund pool is around $550,000, and right now we have outstanding loans around $475,000, and so we have some yet that we can loan. Would that be accurate?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you.
Well, with that, we will lay over House File 995 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you so much.
Representative McFarland's bill number 693.
I'll get started as long as the testifiers are coming down. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 693 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Jobs Omnibus Bill.
Members.
you look at the number of employees.
Go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Chair and members, MEDA, the Metropolitan Economic Development Association, was created in 1971. MEDA provides assistance to businesses owned and managed by ethnic minorities. MEDA services are directed toward new and existing businesses whose owners are committed to making an impact through job creation, their firm's growth and profitability, and community involvement. House File 693 requests $210,000 from the General Fund and $200,000 grant from the Workforce Development Fund in the biennium. With that, MEDA returns a minimum of $11 of economic impact for every dollar invested, year in and year out. While MEDA only receives a small amount of funding from the state, this funding is critical to assist MEDA in leveraging private donations within the community. And with that, I'd like to introduce our testifiers.
State your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chair and representative of the committee, my name is Yvonne Chang Ho, and I am president and CEO of MEDA, Metropolitan Economic Development Association. And I have a handout here that is my presentation. If I can thank you very much, Senator McFarland. I'd like to give you a short presentation about what our organization does and the impact of our work. In addition, I have two clients here that will be giving testimony, and so I'll be as quick as I can, and I'll go through it very briefly. If you flip to the first page of the presentation, I just want to state some facts, and there's a lot of information there, but basically what we're seeing is that small businesses create 64% of the net new jobs in our country, and that is based on some information from a remark made by SBA Administrator Karen Mills. And if you look at that, you can also see that minority businesses play a very vital role in terms of business development and job creation. And people of color, though, you know, when you look at the economic disparity and also the employment disparity, most of the time it falls along racial lines. And so people of color do really has the short end of the stick. And that's really what the second fact sheet is demonstrating. What we have done for 40 years, MEDA has been around, and we worked in building strong and sustainable minority businesses. And the ripple effect of building strong minority businesses include not only are they great employers, they create jobs, but they also pay tax, and through their work, they improve and stabilize communities. We are building business leaders of color. They're inspiring role models for other entrepreneurs of color that want to be an entrepreneur of or youth of color. The next slide shows that MEDA has been doing a survey for the past 16 years. And if you look at the result that comes back from the survey in 2009, we have about 190 companies responding. These are past and current clients of MEDA. They reported over $1 billion in sales, but most importantly, they employ over 5,700 people, and consistently we have demonstrated that minority businesses tend to hire more people of color. In 2009, 54% of that workforce made up of people of color. Since we serve people in a wide array of industries, we also found that the quality of the job is very well, very good. 87% of the employees were paid $12 or more per hour, and 57% of the company provide health care benefits to their employees. And that also helped address some of the problems we have in terms of health care access when you create strong minority businesses. A little bit about MEDA. We're 40 years old, as I mentioned earlier. We were created by the business community in 1971, and our role is focused on working with entrepreneurs of color to help them start and grow their businesses. And we offer services resources that are very relevant in addressing their needs, providing technical assistance, one-on-one business consultation. We also augment that with a very successful volunteer program because we know that we cannot do it all. So a lot of times we recruit volunteers from the corporate community. And also we have a very successful mentor program. We have a leadership program and also a construction partnering program. And one of the clients that are here today can also testify how that program has helped his company not only grow but now prosper. We talked about access to capital. limited access to capital is one of the biggest problems faced by entrepreneurs, and specifically entrepreneurs of color. So MEDA has a loan program too. We're not a micro lender because we know that there's a void in the marketplace. When a company is growing, they need more capital. So the range that we lend out is from $25,000 to $400,000. The average loan size is about $130,000. We also work with the state, the Urban Initiative Program. We're a partner of that, and we're certified by the Department of Treasury as a CDFI, a community development financial institution. We also run the only state procurement technical assistance center. It's a federally funded program helping all businesses to sell to the government. In fact, one of the clients that Women Venture helped, they got a military contract that was because of the help of our PTEC counselor in assisting her business to get that that contract. And then we also, because we're founded by the business community, a lot of corporate connections that we can refer our clients to. We serve ethnic minorities, the four major groups: African, Hispanic, Asian, and Native. And the MEDA-assisted business startups have a four-year survival rate of 76% compared to SBA statistic of 44% nationally. So we have a good track record of success with the people we work with. 2010 was a very busy year for us. We have to really work hard to help many of the businesses to stay afloat. And so, we really, our consultants were very busy working day in and day out in the trenches helping these entrepreneurs. Some of the highlights of our outcome in 2010, we assisted the startup of 10 businesses that created 28 new jobs. We approved financing for $5.8 million. This is not just MEDA money, but also clients that we help and help them put together loan packages, get funding from the banks, and from there, 245 jobs created or retained. Our PTEC program helped our entrepreneurs of color get 767 government contracts, and that brought in about $128 million into our state. Why are we so unique? We're unique because we're statewide. Our clients are represented in many industries. Our clients provide quality jobs. MEDA does have in-house professionals to give advice to our clients, and it's one-on-one advice. PTEC is very unique. It's the only PTEC in the state helping all businesses to sell to the government. And we also leverage our resources by forging public and private partnership. Our goal is to grow companies and help them to be sustainable.
Excuse me. We only have 24 minutes left for this meeting, and if we, you could just get to the high points,
okay.
We can
I'll go
through this. And
in fact, I can really wrap up the presentation. The next slide just kind of show the history of the support we have received from the state. So my request here today is to ask the committee to really see the vital role that minority businesses play in the state economy and continue to invest in MEDA. And so really the highlight of the whole thing is really the client testimony. And I have two of our clients here. I'd like to introduce them to you. The first one on my left is Tony Williamson. Tony and his wife founded a technology company, Ajasa. In fact, he was here last year, but he did a really fantastic job, so I have asked him to come back again to just share with you briefly about his company and what MEDA has done.
Welcome, Mr. Williamson. If you could state your name for the record and be as brief as possible. Thanks.
Anthony C. Williamson III.
The third.
I'd like to be precise.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for hearing our plea today. And I say plea because it is urgent that the funding for MEDA continues. I'm living proof that you can live the American dream here in Minnesota based off the organizations such as MEDA. When my wife and I decided to start our company back in 1995, I didn't have a rich uncle. I didn't have anyone in my family to go to get operational family to go to get operational support, marketing materials, or how to develop a business plan. I had a degree and a dream. And when I came to MEDA, they gave us all the skills that was necessary for us to build our company. And for the sake of time, I'll just make a quick run. In 1995, we started. By 2003, we were doing about $4 million a year. And today, we're doing $35 million a year in business. And I can say it's been a direct reflection of the help that I got from MEDA, from the operational support all the way through the leadership and community service that MEDA provides. And I just want to make sure that you take a good look at the request And please give it very serious consideration, because the money is going to the entrepreneurs of color.
Tony, how many people do you hire?
Right now we have 238 employees, and for the state of Minnesota, we gave up $390,000 in state income tax that we were able to collect and pay back to the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Mahoney, have a question?
Thank you. And I know we're short on time, but if you could just tell the committee what type of technology you sell?
Yeah, we sell a full system life cycle, okay, from analysis, design, build, QA testing, all the way through project management and implementation. We work with most of the finer companies here in town, Wells Fargo, U.S. Bank, Travelers Insurance, Ecolab, 3M, all the major Fortune 500 companies here in town. And how do we get those relationships? I can say we got those direct relationships from Yvonne Chung Ho and the people that she knows in this organization that knows in the state. But, you know, you have to be ready to go, okay? And so you can't have introductions to certain decision makers and don't have a business that's ready to go. And Mita gets the business ready to go. We also have a specialty that we started this year in mobile solutions. So we do customized programming for mobile phones and smartphones.
Mr. Mahoney?
The second client that will testify, his name, but maybe Salah would state his name himself.
My name is Salah Trawaf, and thank you, Mr. Chair and member of the committee. I own Trawaf Construction, and I've been in the construction business for about 20 years, and for the last 10 years on my own. And when I started in 2001, I was doing okay. I went to MEDA, and they helped me secure a loan, about $300,000. And being a believer of the good word, I didn't want to be a slave to the lender, and instead of paying it in 5 years, I was able to pay it in 2 years. So last year, in 2010, I had so much work to do, and I needed more money, went back to my banks, and every one of them turned me down. And I could not understand why, because I had such excellent credit, but it was what was happening around the economy. I went to MEDA, they were able to get me about $400,000. Last year, I was able to increase my personnel by 18 people. I have about 40 employees. Not one of my employees makes them less than $25 an hour because I'm union. Also on top of that, we paid last year about $150,000 in state taxes. I'm very involved with MEDA. We have a program called the Construction Partnership Program, where MEDA takes you and puts you together with a big group, and I've been working with a huge company in town. They're my mentor, and I was able to triple my business last year. This year alone, I'm about $9 million of backlog just for 2011. Most probably, I'll be hiring another 10 people between now and probably June.
Thank you, Salah. In fact, there's an article in the Star Tribune last year talking about how organizations like MEDA can fill the gap for minority entrepreneurs when they go to the bank and they get turned down. So I have copies of that right here, too, that I would pass on.
And I know we're in a hurry, so I'd like to move that we renew the motion for laying House File 693 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Yeah, that we will lay House File 693 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Gunther, House File 983. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to lay House File 983 over for possible inclusion.
Mr. State your name for the record, please. So people 100 years from now will know you were here.
Bob Gunther.
Oh, how fast it goes in their head.
I like him. This bill is about Enterprise Minnesota. Enterprise Minnesota does a good job of getting small businesses up to speed and a new way of doing business. And with that, I would like to turn this over to Mr. Danboy.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Louis Jamboy. I'm currently the president and CEO of the St. Paul Port Authority. I also happen to be on the board of Enterprise Minnesota. Today I'm pinch hitting for Bob Kill, who's off in Washington talking with the congressional delegation about financing through the U.S. Department of Commerce. John Connolly is to my left. He is the director of consulting for Enterprise Minnesota. Consulting is what the organization does, business consulting, and specifically consulting to manufacturers on lean, on quality, and on leadership. This organization was created 20 years ago by the Minnesota legislature and is a standalone nonprofit organization that works with small and medium-sized manufacturers throughout the entire state of Minnesota to help them grow and prosper. I've been following this organization since its its inception 20 years ago, and in my estimation, the leadership, staff, and management are the best that it has been in that 20-year period. It's an honor to be with you today and ask you for support of House File 983. It's the Growth Acceleration Program, or GAP, as it's called. We're asking for $4 million to help businesses grow, prosper, create jobs, create investments, stay in Minnesota, and expand in Minnesota. It is, again, through a consulting activity that the staff provides to individual businesses. GAP was first financed by the legislature in 2007. It had a $750,000 appropriation. In 2009, it received a $1 million appropriation. These were one-time monies that were appropriated. This is not for operating support of Enterprise Minnesota, but it is in fact to provide consulting services to manufacturing businesses. On the impact side, it has served over 145 manufacturing businesses throughout the state. It has leveraged $30 in private capital to $1 of state capital, and Mr. Connolly can explain that to you if you have any questions about it. In terms of eligibility, businesses, of course, must be in Minnesota. They must be manufacturers or closely related industries. They have to have 250 or fewer employees. They have to have a business plan. They have to be able to match this money one-to-one, so there has to be skin in the game from the individual businesses. And the program is administered by deed. In terms of results, when the feds came in and surveyed 91 of the beneficiaries of the program, they determined that of those 91, increased or retained sales of $101 million were achieved by these businesses. Over $9 million in efficiencies and savings were achieved by the businesses, and over 750 jobs were created or retained. In terms of federal support, this money will leverage about $2 million of federal money from the U.S. Department of Commerce. You may wonder how that money might be faring in this congressional session. So far this year, there's a continuing resolution to keep the program going, so it's one of those programs that's doing reasonably well at the federal level. The program is supported by the National Association of Manufacturers. In terms of manufacturing, you all know that manufacturing is key to our economic recovery, to job growth, and to job creation. Bob Kill, the president and CEO, he's hosted many tours of businesses to all of you in your districts. He's available to do that at any time and would like to invite you to go on some of those tours. We know that manufacturing provides the best pay, the best benefits, roots in the community. It is solid Minnesota businesses that help employ people and keep our state thriving. I want to thank you for allowing me to be here today. You know, I'm with the St. Paul Port Authority, and the St. Paul Port Authority has initiatives of its own here. We also support the initiatives of the City of St. Paul. But one of the things that the economic community does pretty well is it supports each other in the various initiatives that are deemed to be very beneficial to the state of Minnesota. And in my capacity as a supporter of economic development in a variety of forms, I'm proud to serve on the board of Enterprise Minnesota, and I'm happy to be here today. We have some props. One of the props is a book on a survey of manufacturers. It is a fabulous compilation recently done of manufacturers' attitudes about the state of the economy and their prospects for prosperity in the future. And there is a listing here of the manufacturers who have been served by this program. And with that, Mr. Chair and members, I will stop. John Conley and I, mostly John Conley, are available here to answer questions. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I know that time is short, so I'll be right to the point. This is probably one that we as a committee and you as a chairman cannot fund enough. The work that they do across the state in the metro area and greater Minnesota has saved hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of jobs and increased the wages of the people that work at those jobs. This is probably one of the best programs we have in the state, and to think that about 6 years ago we tried to kill it off is kind of crazy because of financial reasons and for the state.
Mr. Mahoney, or Representative Mahoney, I agree with this very good program. It not only does that, it prepares our industries to be able to compete in a world market, and I think it's very important that we continue this program. Actually, the desire to cut this program off was as much by the providers of the program it was than by us, but I'm glad it didn't happen.
I didn't mean to imply it.
No, I know you didn't. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to
we have some questions before you. One more four of them here, so we would like to be brief. Mr. Mullery? Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Next. Chair. Mr. Jamboy, I remember when in committee you were advancing the Jobs E-Bill, and I tried to take out the retail, and you said that was a terrible idea, and you beat me down on it. And the following year, you came back in and testified that it was a good idea, and we took out retail. Will there be any changes next year on your testimony from today?
Thank you for that reminder of our history here, Representative Mullery. No, I don't intend to change my testimony next year if Enterprise Minnesota is crazy enough to ask me to come and talk to you again. Thank you.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This will be brief, but I don't know if you have the numbers today, but we've been hearing today from communities of colors and others about the need for you know, involving and serving those communities. And I'm just wondering if you have any numbers that you can tell us in terms of and women-owned businesses. Can you give me any numbers that you may have about your service towards communities of color and women-owned businesses in this list? I can't tell from the names, of course, of the manufacturing companies.
Could I have you state your name for the record, please, sir?
John Connolly. Thank you, Representative. We don't have specific statistics regarding the business ownership or the employment relative to color. I think one of the more pertinent pieces for us is the significance of the jobs that manufacturers provide, and on a broad scale to be able to look at the fact that manufacturing is about 15% of the state's economy, but it represents 18% of the state's wages and incomes is one demonstration of the significance of the jobs more broadly.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I wonder if you could get us that information in the future. That would be helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Leidiger.
Yes, I have a question for Mr. Jamboy. Based on what Representative Mulry was saying, you have a spotted past, I understand. And I think a lot of people don't realize just how far back that goes. Is it true that you're from Oconomowoc, Wisconsin?
It is true, Mr. Chair and Representative Leidiger, it is true that you and I go back to Oconomowoc, Wisconsin approximately 52 years or so.
First grade at St. Jerome's. First grade, St. Jerome's.
Yep, we both passed first grade. That's
yes, we did. It's a surprise to me that I made it. But I'd like to congratulate you on your accomplishments, Mr. Jamboy. I think they chose a good guy to be on the directors of that program. So,
well, thank you very
good man.
Very much, Representative Leidiger. Congratulations to you for being elected to the Minnesota
thank
House
you.
Of Representatives.
Thank you,
Representative Paymar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Real quickly to Mr. Jamboy or Representative Gunther, it's a great program. I'm just curious to know if you have any information on why the governor didn't include it in his budget.
I don't know.
Representative Paymar?
That's it.
With that, we will lay House File 983 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Gunther, House File 893.
1 million, huh?
Hey, we see you there. Mr. Chairman, I move that we lay over House File 983 for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And with that, this is about Vinland Center for Rehabilitation Services. It's a pass-through from the Department of Labor and Industry. And with that, I'd love to let the testifiers cover in all the information you want to know about it. Wonderful facility.
Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, representatives, my name is Mary Rail. I'm the executive director of Vinland National Center. Excuse me. We're located out in western Hennepin County, and we have a unique beginning. We were a gift from the King of Norway in, 1976 as part of the bicentennial. It ended up in Minnesota because our legislature would match that grant as well as the federal government. Vinland does a number of rehab for people with disabilities. We do chemical dependency treatment for adults with cognitive disabilities. We do our vocational program, and we also do housing. The vocational program, as Representative Gunther said, is funded through the Department of Labor and Industry, and we have people that have been injured at work. And these are the people that have worked with the Department of Labor and Industry trying to get back to work. We get their hard cases, the ones that they can't help. And we provide them with a number of different services, including vocational testing, interview, and resume writing. We do basic computer skills. We work with them on wellness. We help them with their physical disabilities and injuries that they have, getting them back into a place where they can go back to work. We have about 50 to 75 clients that come through on an annual basis. We also have actual placement people that work around the state of Minnesota. We have about four different locations around the state, and we do serve about 60% of our state. Our people are outstate clients. And 40% are from the 7-county metro area. We also do some complementary care services that aren't provided in normal vocational setting. Because of the chemical dependency and the other services that we provide, we can offer these unemployed workers access to our psychologists and psychiatrists. We can offer them some of the other grief and loss things that aren't normally focused on in a vocational program. If you're unable to go back to work and do the same job that you did before, there are definitely anger and grief issues that they need to deal with, as well as helping them with any chemical dependency issues that they may have. We get all of our referrals through the qualified rehab counselors at the Department of Labor and Industry. They tell us who they want us to serve and what services they want us to provide. We have about a 61% success with getting people back to work, back into some educational realm, or volunteering with the community. And again, we are only getting the clients that have been already through the system. Some of them go on to settle their work comp cases with insurance carriers, and some of them we don't hear from again. They don't get a job. They're not in the system anymore. It's a great program. It's done amazing work with people who have been chronically injured and unable to do the jobs that they did before. So we are asking for a $200,000 extension on our funding through the Department of Labor and Industry for the next 2 years.
Thank you, Ms. Rail. Representative Swazinski.
Yes, Mr. Chair. So you said you serve about 52 people per year. So on average, how many clients do you have on site at any given time then?
At any given time, it varies from week to week. on-site, we do the vocational testing, we do some of the skills building and some of the other types of services, but they also work with the placement people to actually find jobs in their communities. The placement people will also assist them with job coaching if that's necessary as well.
Thank you. Any other questions? With that, we will lay over House File 893 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you.
Members, we are adjourned.